You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You must remember this is a podcast about the secret and forgotten histories of 20th century Hollywood. Listen to You Must Remember This on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One on One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
When I get on the field, that's where I'm just really comfortable. My most confident version shows up in that element, right? I think it's such a unique game in all the little intricacies and all the game within the game stuff that you're always learning. Like, you're never done learning the game, right? So it's that constant growth and learning process that kind of keeps you hungry for more.
And our guest this week is Kyle Werman. He is the head baseball coach at LaSalle College High School, one of the top coaches, coaching one of the top programs in the area. And Kyle, thanks so much for coming in studio.
Thanks for having me.
So we are taping this early June, not, I guess, too far removed from the end of your season. Are you still mentally chronicling the season, kind of putting things in their perspective? Who's coming back? What did we do well? Where do we need improvement? Stuff like that. Is it still too fresh, or have you already done that and already looking ahead?
It's a little bit of both. Certainly, you know, we finished up about a week ago. We got knocked off by Bonner, who got to be the 6A rep for our Catholic League, and they subsequently, unfortunately, lost yesterday in the first round of the state playoffs. But you look at the group you had, and, you know, we had a pretty talented group coming back, and just, you know, kind of ran out of time. You know, you get one game in high school and you don't play well for a game and your season ends. And, you know, kind of the aspirations to repeat in the league and to make another run to Penn State and give a shot at it, actually winning it again, you know, was what we were hoping for. And just it wasn't to be, you know. So you're in that pivot point where I'm home with the kids now and have a little extra time. My wife's happy from that standpoint, but you think of what could have been. And then, like you said, you're always looking at that next group. You're looking ahead. All right, what's coming back? You know, how do we get ready to right the ship and get it going again next year?
Now, you're a teacher in addition to a coach. Is summer break a real summer break for you, or are there baseball things, camps, stuff like that, that will, I don't want to say keep you occupied, but will be the focus until the next school year?
Yeah, so I definitely transitioned into camp mode. You know, so at LaSalle, the campus never stops. We graduated our seniors 2 Wednesdays ago. You know, so we finish up pretty early. So from an academic standpoint, my role as a teacher has kind of been done for a couple weeks now. But I run camps over 4 different weeks in the summer for baseball. It's one of the perks of being the head baseball coach. We're trying to get a lot of kids on campus, and running our camps is a good way to do that. And you know, it's a great way to kind of sell our program and teach the game to young kids in the area. So definitely pivoting to that mode, setting out emails and starting to deal with registrations, all the fun stuff, getting ready for camp in a couple weeks.
When you're doing these camps, what's the age range?
We go rising second grade all the way to rising ninth grade.
When is the time frame when you can start to tell a kid's going to be a player? I don't know what that ceiling is, but when it's the kid's having fun, you know, the kid knows the game too. Okay, I see a skill set here. I see an understanding. This is a kid still growing. Let's keep an eye on. Like, is there a certain time frame in a kid's development?
I mean, you can see it real early in baseball. I think baseball is unique because there's certainly athleticism component, right? The bigger, faster, stronger you are, the better athlete you're going to be. It certainly leads to success. But, you know, unlike, you know, other sports where that might just be the thing you need. In baseball, there's a skill piece. You have to throw the ball properly. You got to swing the bat properly. You got to be able to catch and throw. And you start to see those skills show up. Some of these kids that have had some instruction or just have been around the game a little bit at an early age, can actually have a lot of polish early. You know, so there are some second and third graders like, whoa, these kids, they got some nice actions. They've been watching, you know, some of these Phillies games, and they can swing the bat a little bit. And what ends up happening over the from like second grade on to that ninth grade is you see that separation of the kids that have the skill plus they have that unique athletic ability. And those are the special players. But certainly a unique sport in the sense that you don't have to be a great athlete to be pretty good. You know, we have a lot of really good players at LaSalle that, you know, check some of the athletic boxes. They may not be your Division One elite athletes, but they're really skilled and they can play at a high level because they combine that mix.
I think you've had 57, I read, kids that have gone through the program since you took over in 2015 that have gone on to play college baseball.
It's been a big number. It's been, you know, 5 to 6 a year, sometimes a little more. It's been pretty consistent.
That's extraordinary. Like, how much does that feed on itself that kids see that, oh, if I play here, if I play for coach, I've got a chance to go. So more kids take it seriously and it becomes kind of this. And I don't want to take any credit away from you and your staff and the kids, but it becomes this thing that it becomes a realistic goal. So the kids work harder because it is something they see they can reach.
It's all those things. I mean, it starts with the school. I mean, it's a college prep high school, you know, so when you look at the kids that are looking at LaSalle College High School academically, they're kids that care about education. Their families are invested in that growth and that piece of it. They have aspirations to pursue college, you know, after high school at the highest level they can be. And then you look at the extracurriculars, whether it's athletics or it's even arts. Your music program's excellent. You know, these kids are coming in who are high achievers and they have high goals, right? And so, you know, we look at our baseball program specifically. There's certainly that expectation for a lot of the kids coming in. They understand that the success we've had raises the bar for what level you need to be at to enter the program. And I think guys get there and we have a lot of freshmen that try out, and unfortunately we got to make really tough decisions, but those guys that make that cut, it becomes a little more real, like, okay, maybe this is a pathway. And as they've worked through our program and you start getting down to what that varsity group looks like, you know, what it's really evolved to over the last 5 to 10 years is that if guys can make our varsity roster, there's a realistic pathway to playing at the college level, you know, and I think that pushes guys around them to be great in practice. It's a unique environment in a practice setting where the bench player next to you realistically could play somewhere, you know, if they want to pursue that path. So it creates a little different level of competition that you don't typically see at a high school, where a college level skill player is probably going to default to being in the lineup regardless, just from a size standpoint. Whereas LaSalle, you're going to have to earn it in practice, and the best player is going to play. And it's my job to find that role for everybody and make them feel valued. But you can't play every guy on the roster every inning. And so, you know, I think that's part of the culture that's developed, and it's really prepared our guys when they do move on. Now with the transfer portal and the talent at the college level is as deep as it's ever been. You're watching. I was up late last night watching Little Rock compete with LSU till 1 a.m. in the morning. Here's a team that was under 500 during the regular season, is competing with one of the blue bloods in the sport, you know, and they're talented, you know. So knowing what that is at that next level and having lived it for 4 years at LaSalle, they're really prepared when they get there to compete against their teammates first, and then they're prepared when they get on the field against other teams.
From the teaching standpoint, physics, is that your focus teaching?
Yeah, primarily physics. I do teach engineering as well.
Has that been a lifelong love as well?
You know, it's funny that I never thought I would be a teacher. I did engineering school in college more as I knew I was good at math and science, and hey, I'll get a good job somewhere and I'll figure out what I'm passionate about. I certainly knew baseball was a piece I wanted to pursue. I was fortunate to, you know, play under Brian O'Connor, who just took the head job at Mississippi State and left my alma mater, which is a little heartbreaking, but it's certainly a good move for him and his staff. But it kind of sparked that reality of like coaching could be a profession, and that kind of got me going. But, you know, I've always loved teaching in the realm of baseball. And, you know, as a college coach, you start to see the realities of what that commitment was, and certainly want to be involved and have a family and raise a family. And that's where kind of teaching and, you know, becoming an actual teacher became an avenue where I can maybe have the best of both worlds. And that's kind of how I stumbled into it. My first teaching job was at LaSalle in 14-15, you know, and was able to use kind of the engineering background to apply that to teaching physics and I really love it. I mean, I certainly look back like, boy, I'm an idiot for not having pursued that from the beginning, because it's really a great situation.
I'm curious, you don't see a ton of people in baseball with a science engineering background. Do you feel getting to scratch the itch of that and then scratch the itch of baseball on a daily basis to go back and forth keeps you fresh? You're not being run into the ground baseball 24/7. You're not being run into the ground focusing on the science and stuff like that. like every day it feels like maybe you get to refresh yourself by focusing on a different aspect that really, you know, I'm sure there's some overlap when it comes to physics and baseball and stuff like that, but, you know, that are separate parts of the brain. Every day you get to do that.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I think I had a chance right out of college to work in your traditional 9-to-5, work for Raytheon in Falls Church, Virginia, and didn't make it a full year. I was doing that kind of as an off-season gig. I was still able to play. But I got a taste for what that is, and the idea of showing up every day and taking that throughout a full year and certainly finding time for vacation. But what I loved about the college game as a coach was that transition from season to recruiting the summer to a fall team. Then you had a little winter break. And now as a teacher, you kind of get the same thing. You get these different versions of the year, both with coaching a baseball team and then as a teacher, that create that natural break that certainly refreshes you. It gives you different challenges, new group of kids in the classroom, new ideas, new topics you want to teach, or different challenges. Maybe they throw a different class you got to teach, you know, that you haven't taught before. So you're exactly right. It keeps you fresh and keeps you kind of excited for that new challenge. And I tell people all the time, I've got the perfect job. I have no desire to do anything other than what I'm doing because I've got great kids at LaSalle. My family's close. Get to check all the boxes I like.
Do you have a lot of your players in your classes?
I do. Yeah. I mean, probably about 4 or 5 guys this year. On any given year, I have a cross section that have come through that I've taught. Certainly helps to be in the building. You see kids from a different perspective and maybe humanizes me a little bit away from the field. Sometimes it makes it more challenging because, you know, what you want from them as a baseball player and then what they are as a student, those can overlap. It lets you know them as a person, makes it really difficult when you get to tryout time and you see what these kids put in and how amazing these kids are and you have to make impossible choices and let somebody go. And then you roll in the next day and they're in your classroom and you have to find that way to relate with them. As a person, because baseball shouldn't define them, but certainly that's one of the hardest things that they're going to go through earlier in their high school career is to hear and a no in the sport that they love. So it adds a challenge, and it certainly makes me feel more responsible for the types of decisions I need to make.
How much of a learning curve have you had with that? And, you know, I mean, you talk about the decisions of kids not good enough. And I would imagine there are times when maybe a kid's being kind of a knucklehead on the baseball team. Nothing terrible, but just kind of difficult to deal with. And in class, you've got to not let the experience on the field transfer, or do you kind of merge the two so that there's hey, you've been screwing around over here. Let's not let it go here, whatever. But is there a push-pull there with the two kind of separate relationships you have with some of these kids?
There certainly can be. Look, I mean, the reality is that these are young boys, and all boys Catholic school, and I'd be lying if I didn't say my varsity players maybe have their head in baseball a little bit more than academics at certain times in the year. But, you know, we talk about finding balance, right? And making sure we're a complete person and a complete student. The academics always come first. So if there's one way I can leverage my role as their baseball coach is I can certainly carry the stick at times in enforcing some of the academic stuff. You know, we as faculty, we have a lot of coaches that are in the building as teachers and we look out for each other's, you know, student athletes, you know, understanding that, you know, if we're letting them slide academically, they're not going to be prepared when they go to college and they got to maintain their academic status, you know, to be eligible, you know, so we're not doing them any favors. So we certainly communicate and our guys don't want me tapping them on the shoulder, asking about the homework they're not doing in math class. So it kind of is a nice balance for them to let that motivation in baseball sometimes help them stay on track with what they need to do academically.
How difficult is, I talked about when you have the kids in camp and trying to figure out like who's really got it and stuff like that. With the high school age kids, is it hard to project, you know, because they're not done growing and you don't know when they're going to, when the spurt's going to come or anything like that? You know, do you get caught a lot of times where a kid is a freshman who just doesn't seem to be able to keep up, and then over one winter you're like, who are you? You're 6 inches taller, stuff like that. I'm exaggerating, but you know what I'm saying. Like, how hard is it to project what a kid could be? And do you feel like you've gotten better at it, or do you feel you've always been pretty good at getting a feel for what a kid's going to be over his 4 years with you?
You know, I think the background coaching youth ball before high school, coaching in college and evaluating high school players to project them to be what they would be on a college roster, you get better at identifying the skill set. And then you look at body types, look at how they move. You know, there's some kids who haven't physically hit puberty yet, but really control their body well. They're still twitchy. They got some athleticism. They can still get the ball across the diamond, but they haven't grown yet. Versus the kid that maybe is kind of moving underwater at times. They don't have the body control. So you start to learn how to project the athleticism piece as a separate thing of where they have grown developmentally. And I think I'm always fascinated. I had a freshman homeroom this year, you know, and you see the freshman group, you look at their pictures from day one to just the end of one school year, and some of these kids have grown 6 inches, you know, and, you know, the same thing happens on the baseball field, and you're like, man, I saw you 3 months ago, you look like a different kid. So that's a part of it, and it makes the evaluation challenging. You know, I think you have to look at where their skills are and where they project, and then you have to look at where they are athletically. So you're going to have kids that are physically ready, but maybe not as skilled. You know, the kids that's physically ready and skilled, well, they're going to be the kid that maybe jumps and competes against the older kids a little earlier in their career. But every kid's a little different, you know, and then what you don't know is what drives that kid to get better. And there's always that kid that comes back and has been working their butt off and really makes a jump because they're committed. And there's always that kid that I see all this potential in, but they don't put in that work and they're the same guy. And so I can project what I think they can be, but if they don't want it, it's not going to come to fruition. So that's all part of the balance of evaluating. And we're fortunate that we have a lot of really talented, motivated kids that push each other. And it leaves us with some tough choices, but ultimately enough really talented players that we can be competitive every year.
How often are you surprised either with how much a kid grew or how much the group? Like maybe you go into a season and think, all right, we'll be pretty good, but we're really struggling here and here. And I think competing for a Catholic League title might be more difficult. And then, wow, look, this group came together. Do you find yourself constantly surprised once in a while, or do you feel like you're to the point where pretty good idea of what a group or a kid is capable of over the course of a season?
I mean, I think as a group, I always have a pretty good idea of what I think we're going to have. Yeah, I can look ahead to next year, have an idea of what kind of team we're going to have and how competitive we can be. It's certainly a different type of team. You know, we're going to graduate 3 power Division I arms that are going to school. That's a hard thing to replace. But we have a lot of talented pitchers that are unproven. So, you know, as a coach and staff, we're talking about, hey, who's going to make that jump? Who's that 82-mile-an-hour right-hander that's going to be 86, 87 next year? And it will happen. And, you know, we're kind of informally betting on who those guys are going to be. And that's what's exciting because you're right. Every year things change. And I look at guys over our time that, you know, I've had freshmen that didn't make the freshman team, and then 3 years later, they're our ace pitcher and going to a Division I school. You know, and it's rewarding to see a player like that continue to grind and compete. I really try to keep an open mind every year for where a kid is at now versus where they were a year ago. See the trend, but also not penalize a kid for where they were a year ago because they do learn and grow. When you fail and you learn and you're better, well, that's what you want, right? So that's hopefully what we're trying to create in our program, you know, so that a kid can make that jump and is rewarded for it. And we've seen that. So on an individual level, there's certainly every year a couple of kids like, wow, that's pretty exciting to see that kid. And there's equally a couple of kids like, boy, I saw something more and it's just not there anymore. You know, and then every team's going to be different regardless.
All right. So growing up, was baseball your number one sport? You grew up in Southern California, right?
So I was born in Southern California and we moved when I was going into my 12-year-old Little League year. So I got a little taste of Little League in California and then my last year here in Virginia. Coincidentally, my Little League was in Little League World Series, El Segundo.
Okay.
And my 12-year-old Little League was in the TV game, was a game away from Williamsport in the same year. Pretty wild. But yeah, so definitely went to camps as a young kid in Southern California. It's kind of where I got the bug. And mm-hmm. My dad wasn't a baseball guy, but he kind of caught the bug with me. And we learned the game together, and he became kind of one of the coaches for me on our Little League teams. And my younger brother's, you know, 7.5 years younger. So there's enough of an age gap that he was my little protege. I wanted to coach up. You know, so that's maybe where the coaching piece came from, both the combination of my dad, but also I had a younger brother. I wanted to give everything I learned. You know, so all the camps I went to that I learned my skills, I was handing it right down to my little brother. And so that's kind of how, as a family, my dad, my brother, and I kind of developed that bond through baseball, you know, and it's still there today. And it's certainly, you know, has led to my current passion, and you know, my brother's still in the game, you know, and so it's a pretty special sport.
When do you start to think you're pretty good playing?
I think, you know, it's funny, we talked to one of the themes with our LaSalle guys, you know, some of the mental side of the game is, you know, there's all this expectation and there's all this pressure and external pressure, especially when you're talented, you know, and we talked about the term of being a dude, you know, like there's something about the best players, they have a confidence, like an awareness, like, I just know I'm the guy. You know, and nobody can tell you that. You have to become that through experience, right? And so, you know, I think for me personally, there it probably happened at some point in the Little League, but it's also in different facets of the game, right? I knew defensively, I was a dude. That's where I felt comfortable. Put me at second base, and I was going to be able to make plays and turn double plays. That was where I felt like I shined, and I was not a dude at the plate. I was competitive. I put balls in play. I did all the little things I needed to do. But I certainly, if you gave me a choice to take ground balls or hit BP on the field, I was taking ground balls every day. But I think as talk to my players about it, it's just – when you put in the work and you have some success, you start to build confidence, the best evaluators of ability are the kids themselves. They all can look around them on their roster and they know exactly where they stand. They may not like where they stand. They might not be able to verbalize to either themselves, their coach, or often their parents, where they actually stand. Their parents often have no idea where they actually stand. But if you ask the kid and if they were honest, they would be very accurate on where they stand relative to their peers. And I think that's how things are in life, you know, in any kind of social setting. People know where they stand, you know, and you develop confidence by having success in whatever environment that is. And then that leads to more success.
So you went to college at Virginia and you walked on.
Yes.
That takes a certain amount of confidence to walk on at a program like Virginia. And then, oh, by the way, you start for 4 years, right? When you walk on, do you remember what were your expectations kind of given to that answer to the last question? Did you think I'm going to be a guy here? Did you just think it would be fun to be a part of the team? Like, did you have a mindset going in as a walk-on at Virginia?
You know, it's funny. It's so different now in the recruiting. Like, never could have gone my path the way the game is now. That's absolutely the case. And certainly Virginia's program was a very different place when I got there. You know, but I was a really late bloomer. So when I showed up on college campus, I was 117 pounds and 5'6". So I had barely hit puberty by my senior year. But going through the process as a senior, you know, my hope was just to get my foot in the door someplace. I remember going and visiting. I lived in Virginia at the time. So we went down to Virginia Tech, to UVA and William & Mary. Those are the three schools that were in-state schools. They fit my family's budget academically. They were a couple of the better schools that I felt were going to be a good fit for me that I could get into. And really evaluated and look, hey, could I play at one of these places? You know, and we went and watched a practice, went and watched UVA practice. And I'm looking on the field, and like any of these kids, they always look at the worst player on the field and say, oh, I'm better than them, so I can definitely play here. And that's not really how coaches recruit, by the way. They look at their best player and say, are you better than him? Well, then I want you. But as the naive self I was, I looked at it and said, you know, I'm better than that guy. I can do that. And went to their camp and then went to their camp again in the summer after I decided to go there. And at that point, I had kind of settled in, like, look, academics is number one. This is a school I want to be at. I hope I can play. I'm going to do everything I can, but I can live with it if I don't make it. And I was fortunate that going into that fall, I went to the Best in Virginia Showcase Camp with Dennis Womack, was a longtime head coach at that time. And it turned out my assistant coach in high school, Justin Counts, he's now the head football coach at James Madison High School and also the baseball assistant, was the kind of team captain catcher on their 96 ACC championship team. And he had made a phone call to that head coach prior to that week, say, hey, keep an eye on this Werman kid. You know, he's not where he needs to be yet, but might be a guy to keep an eye on. And that kind of got my foot in the door. So coming out of that camp in August, after I'd already been through the admissions process, and Coach Womack said, hey, well, you can join us from day one, right? So that was kind of my foot in the door. And, you know, you get there, and I wasn't physically ready, but I could catch bullpens, right? And so I made myself valuable. And catching kind of opened that door. I was really an infielder, but I could catch, and that's what I did my first year. And kind of redshirted myself, told Coach, hey, I know I'm never going to play, so don't put me in, don't burn a year. You know, and they're like, sure, whatever. And it wasn't really till the next year that I really had to kind of prove myself. And that's kind of, you know, when you talk about like betting on yourself and having belief, going into that fall of my sophomore year, if you know anything about college fall, you inter squad a ton, right? That's where you earn your opportunities. You split squad and you play. And here we are, like halfway through the fall, and they're splitting squads, and I'm not on either team. You know, clearly I'm not in the mix, you know, and I'm having conversations with my dad and, you know, like, hey, you know, what's going on here? Like, how am I going to have a chance to play if I'm not even on the field for an inter squad? And he's like, well, you know, you should go talk to your coach, go find out. You know, so here I go walking into the office, and I remember walking in, and Coach Womack's in all the coaches in this tiny little office there at the time in University Hall. And I sit down and I tell him, hey, you know, I realize I'm not playing in these scrimmages. You know, what do I need to do to get on the field? You know, and Coach Womack's, well, you know, we know you're doing engineering, and, you know, we just don't know if you're physical enough and all this. I'm like, well, I think I can at least defend. I mean, you got this freshman, Mark Reynolds. I think I'm better than him at shortstop, right? Yeah, and they look at me like I have two heads, you know, and I'm like, to their credit, they're like, all right, here you go, a little squirt. And they gave me opportunities. I played short the rest of the fall on the against Mark Reynolds and held my own. And opening day, I'm the starting second baseman. You know, it's just, it's funny how things work out. I think, you know, it speaks about, you got to advocate for yourself. I certainly believed, at least on the defensive side of this book, I felt like I could hold my own. I wasn't an offensive threat, but I believed I belonged, you know, and that was kind of my door to getting playing time there.
Was there a point when you didn't feel like a walk-on anymore?
You know, it's funny. Every year you have that little, always that little self-doubt, like, is there somebody else they're bringing in? Is it my job to keep, you know? And I remember kind of my third year there under the staff, felt pretty confident this is my job, but they brought in a nice freshman who was good. And then in the fourth year, they had the coaching change. That's when Brian O'Connor came in. So here I am. I'd been a starter for 2 years, and now it's a whole new staff. What do they value, right? Do they value what I bring, which is defense, you know, and being an average hitter? And they had a couple of really good freshmen that came in. And, you know, so we're in the fall of my, really at this point, redshirt junior year. And here I am in all the inner squads playing shortstop, but I know I'm not the shortstop, right? I know that's not my role. Mark Reynolds is shortstop. We got Ryan Zimmerman's our third baseman. We got a pretty good club. And I'd been the second baseman, and they got this freshman over at second base, Matt Dunn, who's a heck of a player out of Georgia. And I didn't play a single inning at second base all fall. I get the other fall like, oh, crap, I guess they don't like what I'm bringing to the table. Only to find out, before my fall meeting, Matt Dunn comes to me. He's like, hey, congrats, you got the starting second base job. I'm like, oh, that's news to me. It turns out, you know, Brian O'Connor and his infinite wisdom's looking at, he's like, he knows, I know you can play second base, but I need to know who our backup shortstop is. But that was the insecurity kind of manifested itself with, you know, in that setting, right? It's like, what is my role? How do they value what I bring? And so I ended up playing second base, and it really was my last year was the only year I really felt super comfortable. This is my job to lose. But I think that's part of any healthy competition. If you're ever comfortable, you're in trouble, you know? So you got to have confidence, but you also got to know there's guys pushing you, and your responsibility is to keep pushing ahead, and that's what good teams do.
And just for anybody who's listening, a couple of the names that were dropped, Ryan Zimmerman, longtime Washington National Philly killer, and Mark Reynolds, close to 300 home runs playing for Arizona. Like, so you as a walk-on, this is the level that you're playing at. How much do you think that idea that, well, could they find somebody and made you a better player? I would imagine there was never, you could never take anything for granted. And just talking to you and listening to you, a mindset of always striving, somebody could always be catching up. I would imagine it probably, you're not thinking this way at the time, but in the grand scheme, helped you?
Look, I've always had the benefit of being the underdog. Like, you look out on the field, I was objectively always the smallest kid on the field at every level, Little League all the way up. And I think that that's been something that in the moment can be challenging, but when I look back, like, that's, I'm so thankful for that. And it gave me that extra edge, that something to prove, you know. And I think, you know, that's what every player needs to find in some way. And that was a natural way for me to create that competitiveness, something to prove, just being the smallest guy. So that was a piece of it, you know, but I think you got to be competitive. You got to want to win. And at the end of the day, if you believe you're good enough, it doesn't matter who's around you. You know, we had a good program. It was exciting to be a part of that program, transitioning from a sub 500 perennial bottom half kind of program to, in a single calendar year, being a top 10 program in the country. And now for two decades being a blue blood, you know, I think that that to me was really formative, and it was fun to be a part of kind of that transition.
We need to take a break. We will have more with Kyle Werman in just a few moments. But right now, I want to remind you that One-on-One with Matt Leon is sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. Meet the next generation of vehicles. Check out the Honda Prologue, Accord Hybrid, or Civic Hybrid. For a limited time, you can get 0.99% APR on a 2025 Prologue, a 2.99% APR on a 2025 Accord Hybrid, or a 4.99% APR on a 2025 Civic Hybrid. Contact your local Honda dealer today. Offers applicable only to well-qualified buyers. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's get back to our conversation with LaSalle College High School head baseball coach Kyle Werman.
You played 221 games. Last I saw, you were like second all-time in games played at the University of Virginia. One or two stand out?
You know, there's a couple. You remember some of your firsts and your lasts. You know, I remember my first at-bat. The irony is I probably hit less than 10 extra base hits my whole career, but I bookended my career with extra base hits. I had a double that found a gap in my first at-bat of my career and hit a double in Oregon State in my last at-bat of my career. So you remember those little bookend ones. My redshirt freshman year, Florida State came into town and I got a walk-off hit to beat them on a Friday night. Those are some fun, like, individual memories. But outside of that, I think you remember, like, little snippets of things. But what you remember the most are, we would do these Iron Cavalier challenges that were something that Brian O'Connor's staff brought in my fourth year, my redshirt junior year, and in the fall. And I really felt that was super formative for creating that mental toughness, that team camaraderie piece. And the memories I remember most about my experience are on the obstacle course when there's 6 inches of snow on the ground, we're army crawling through slush in the infield, running the stadium steps and carrying sandbags. Like, those are the things you actually remember, and you remember the bonds with the teammates, getting up at 6 a.m. running 300s. You know, the baseball stuff kind of comes and goes. Those are fun memories, but it's really those bonds and that hardship that you put through together that, in hindsight, you look back, it's what really bonded the group and made us so damn competitive.
Best pitcher you faced in college?
I mean, there were certainly some notable ones, Verlander we saw on a Tuesday night at ODU, his draft year. He came in like the fifth inning on a 40-degree windy day.
That had to be fun to face.
He was pumping 98 on his like 90th pitch or whatever it was. So I saw him. I found a way to be productive in unconventional ways. I think I had like a duck fart single, like literally a blooper over third baseman's head. I got hit by pitch. Those are things, I never barreled any of those guys out, but certainly saw some guys. Andrew Miller was a guy for North Carolina, Daniel Bard. Funny part was they weren't even the best pitchers on their staff. Rob Woodard, who's the head coach at UNC Charlotte, was a right-hander, 84, 87, from all different slots, was their ace that year, and they had these other two big leaguers. It's fun to be able to look back and run some names up there that you ran into, but there were certainly countless others that dialed it up against us that never had the big league career, but those are a couple of names that came to mind.
Now, you have all the success at Virginia, and then you played an affiliated ball for a year and Frontier League for two after that. What's the road? Like, what was your confidence level that you could get a shot at professional baseball? And when do you start to look at it as something you want to pursue?
I think if you're a college player, you don't have some aspiration to play the next level. I think once guys are on the field and they're playing every day, that's the next thing you can do, right? Obviously, there's team goals and stuff, but individually, it's like, all right, what's the next level? So, I would say like my last couple of years in college, my fifth year, I'm like, hey, this would be awesome. Maybe I get drafted. That was a year. Ryan Zimmerman, that was his draft year. It was my fifth year. And so every scout in the country is out watching him play every game. So there's a ton of visibility. You're seeing that process go and, watching him handle that. So in the back of my mind, I'm like, boy, is somebody going to give me a shot? Here I am hitting like 270, right? They really go for those big defenders, right, that are 5'7". But I was hoping for a chance, But I think there was maybe one organization maybe let me fill out a questionnaire, made me feel good about that, right? But the reality is I was realistic about what those chances were going to be. But it turned out I had already lined up a job to work at Raytheon, was just playing a local men's league in the summer in Northern Virginia, and then got a random phone call in early August. Gene Kearns was a longtime area scout for the Mets, and he calls me up and like, who is this? I thought I was being prank called, and turns out that it had some injuries in the Mets organization. I'm just looking for a filler player, to be honest, to fill out a roster in rookie ball. And I was a name in the area because they'd seen Virginia play so much. This guy's going to hold his own. And so I got a chance to play the last 2 weeks of the season down in Kingsport, Tennessee, in their advanced rookie club. Jesse Levis was the manager of the club. He actually lives literally around the block from me in Upper Dublin right now. So I'm watching, hey, I know you from like 20 years ago. But so that was my foot in the door. Funny story there. When I signed, I'm like, look, I got an engineering job. Like, is this going to be 2 weeks and done, or can I at least have a chance here? Because I'm not, can I go to spring training? So they told me, we'll let you come to spring training as well. And you have a chance to really compete for something. I'm like, great. And then I get a phone call in like October or November. Like, yeah, we're letting you go. I'm like, well, what the heck? You lied to me. So I raised some sting and probably burned some bridges somewhere, but they end up conceding and letting me come to spring training, which turned out to be straight to extended spring training. And for people that don't know, you have regular spring training, then they send everybody to the full season clubs, and then you start baseball purgatory, which is extended spring training, which is all the short season clubs, which a lot of those clubs don't even exist anymore because of all the contraction of pro baseball. But so I went straight to extended, got my token 3 weeks, and then they jettisoned me from there. And at that point, I had already had the summer lined up with a leave of absence from Raytheon. I'm like, well, might as well try this. So I looked up. There were some tryouts. There's a Can-Am League tryout up in Jersey I drove up to. And then there's a Frontier League tryout. There was just south of Cincinnati, forget the name of the town, but they had a tryout for a team. So I did a tryout in Jersey, drove home, got home at like 10 p.m., and then got a call that this other tryout was happening. Drove through the night to Cincinnati, tried out on no sleep. Coach then told me, I don't think you're for us, but the league tryout's up in Chicago tomorrow. So I drove straight from there to Chicago, and had this big league tryout in Chicago for the Frontier League, and did the tryout and got drafted. They'd go through a little tryout draft to the Washington Wild things, and then drove straight to Washington, PA, and got set up in a little host family, and had like a little had a run there with the Wild things.
When you get that chance with the Mets high rookie ball, did you feel like you had taken a giant step forward, like level of play, or was it pretty even to what you guys played when you were at Virginia? Because I would imagine a lot of the same type of player are at that level at that time. You know, you're just out of college.
Absolutely. I think that the reality of professional baseball, you know, is a lot of what the minor leagues are is cultivating skills and talent. And then you hope the cream rises and you get enough of that. And it's certainly been consolidated a lot. So it's very different now. But when you look at that rookie level team, it's a lot of 18, 19 year olds. I was now almost 23 at that point. You know, so here I am, like a grown man, relatively speaking, these young kids. Some of these kids, you know, they're just out of high school. And so there's a lot of immaturity. There's a lot of guys that don't know how to really play baseball, but they have some skill. You know, so I certainly felt like I was a very seasoned. I knew the game really well. I can compete and perform at that level. I certainly wasn't as toolsy as those guys. I wasn't going to do the things they could do with the bat or running or arm strength, things like that. But I felt like I belonged. And at times, I think there's frustration because, like, look, I'm a better player than this guy, but I'm not going to be a big leaguer, right? That kid, if he does figure it out, has got a big league tool. So I think that's the tricky part about minor league baseball is you're trying to create an environment where everybody's evaluated on, could they be a big leaguer, right? Not are they a big leaguer now, not are they a good player now for that matter, but if you gave them time and developed them, could they be? And if the answer is yes, they're going to hang on to you and they're going to give you as much time to develop you. And in that time, you're going to be a really bad baseball player at times, making horrible decisions and not know how to play the game. And it's going to be a bad brand of baseball at times. So I think that's that mix of what pro baseball is versus really what the college game was. And frankly, what I loved about playing independent ball was it really was playing real baseball. It was about winning. We had a really good team. Some of my best baseball memories are playing those two summers of the Wild things and still in touch with a lot of those guys. And because you're not playing to develop individually, you're playing to win as an organization, right, in that league. And certainly as individual, you can get out of indie ball and go get back to affiliate ball. That's a goal for every individual, but there wasn't development. If you performed, you played. If you didn't perform, they released you and they got somebody else. And I think I love that element of it. It felt a lot more competitive like the college game was.
That short stint with Kingsport, was that the first time you felt old in life?
Probably. Yeah. I certainly was the old man on that club for sure.
At 23.
Yeah, at 23. Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, Frontier League, and I remember when Camden was in the Atlantic League, like, I don't think these leagues get enough credit. I think they get dismissed because they're not connected to the affiliated baseball. But you could see former big leaguers come through Camden all the time, and you'd see kids like, wow, why isn't that guy playing somewhere? And you talk about the fond memories, like, how were the Wild things received by the fans? Like, past the baseball, what was the experience like?
It was a really, really cool environment. So they have a stadium right there just south of Pittsburgh. You drive right by it on, was it 70, 78, whatever the big highway is. And, I mean, they have 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 fans a night. It's a big deal. They got this mascot, the Wild thing. It does the Wild thing workout. I don't know if they still do it, but it was in the seventh inning stretch. He comes in. They do like the Sandstorm song, and he's got this wiggle and does this bouncing backflip, and everybody gets behind it. I mean, it was quite the show, and you felt in that little town like you were big leaguers. You know, we had free tickets to the movie theater. We just go sit and just watch whatever movies we want. Like you walked around town and people kind of knew you were a Wild thing. It was a big deal, you know. And the joke was like, we knew we were, you know, this second rate professional group, right? But I think you didn't get treated that way. People really loved the Wild things and they came out and supported you and you got a chance to win and you built that. And that was a lot of fun. And certainly you get an element of that in some of these college summer league environments. There's certainly pieces of that. And I think it doesn't matter the level. If you get that kind of support and fans, it's a ton of fun.
When your playing days are done after a couple of years in Washington, are you comfortable with that? Or does it still nag at you for your first few years of coaching that, I'm still in shape. I don't know where it would be, but I'd really like to if that phone rings, I'm all over it. Or were you like, it's time to move on. What's next?
I think the rational part of me knew it was time. You know, I kind of went into that indie ball stint knowing, like, look, this is for me to enjoy playing the game and have fun doing it. I had an absolute blast. I did not have any visions of grandeur, like I was going to get signed again and move on. This was it. And I was going to enjoy it as long as I could. But I also knew that when the opportunity to coach opened, I need to be ready for that. And that's kind of how I exited, was I got an opportunity to coach at Virginia and left at the All-Star break. But yeah, I certainly have like a reoccurring dream slash nightmare. I wake up, you know, where I've kind of made this, has gotten an opportunity to go either, you know, go play again. Or the reoccurring one now is I get a call from, you know, Coach Oak or something. Hey, come coach with me down wherever. And I take that and then realize only afterwards that, boy, I just gave up a lot to do that and why I actually love the path I'm on. But I think everybody has dreams of going back and still playing. And I'm fortunate now I get to live it every day as a coach, playing them at local men's league. I have a blast doing that on Sundays. And so I get a little bit of that fix, and I think that's enough.
You talked about mentoring your little brother, and that might be where the coaching was. Coaching baseball always going to be a part? It's just a matter of what it looked like in your life?
I just feel like the sport was so impactful for me, right? It was such a big piece of my confidence as a person, right? When I get on the field, that's where I'm just really comfortable. My most confident version shows up in that element, right? I think it's such a unique game in all the little intricacies and all the game within the game stuff that you're always learning. Like, you're never done learning the game, right? So it's that constant growth and learning process that kind of keeps you hungry for more. And, you know, I look at, like, you know, swing mechanics and things that I remember thinking what I knew about hitting as a college player. And then as my first couple of years as a college coach, I remember, you know, coaching up Justin Bohr was our big first baseman. I was coaching George Mason. He played in the big leagues, and he had this big hitch in his hands. He had this kind of funky mechanics, but he hit like 400 and hit like 20 jacks. Like, he was really good, and he was kind of stubborn at times. I had ideas of what I thought a good swing was, and I was at least smart enough to get out of the way, and he was smart enough not to listen to me. You know, and what I thought I knew about hitting totally changes 10 years later, and then totally changes again 5-6 years later. Now, what I think hitting wise mechanically is so dramatically different than what I ever did as a player. It's pretty wild, right? To be 40 plus years old and still whole new elements of the game open up to you. So I think that's what I love about the game. And then it's just such a great medium to be able to share that with other people in the coaching capacity and to teach that and to share that with people.
So you start coaching at Virginia as an assistant, George Mason, Radford, up on Hawk Hill.
Mm-hmm.
So that's about, what, 6-7 year run before you, in 2015, come to LaSalle College High School. When along that run of making those stops, do you start to feel like you hit your stride as a coach?
I would say kind of when I transitioned to St. Joe's, I kind of had a pretty good sense of where I was and what I could do if I wanted to pursue it. I felt like I had enough background in the recruiting. I had made enough mistakes and had learned it. Feel like, okay, I kind of know what kind of kid I want to recruit. And what kind of kid has success, kind of have a philosophy around how you go about it, you know, how to handle kids, you know, how to develop a team from a coaching standpoint, you know, and really at that point in my career is really like, well, what direction do I personally think I want for my career? You know, is Fritz Hamburg's amazing, was an awesome coach to coach for and still a close friend and was an awesome experience there. And you know, I miss that. But the college coaching game is a lifestyle. You know, and that lifestyle, there's other pieces of the puzzle that have to work as well. And you can make it work with family, but it's a different kind of challenge. You know, so I think that those are really the questions I had. It's like, all right, well, my next step would be to either take a big assistant coaching job at a big power level school and all that entails. Ideally, I think maybe a low level mid-major D1 was a great role, or even a Division III head coaching role where you can kind of put your stamp on the program, maybe a little less commitment, maybe you can have assistants do some work. And at the end of the day, though, like, you can't have half a foot in any job. Like, I realized, like, if I was going to be a head coach somewhere, I'm still going to be working as hard as all my assistants. Like, finding that balance was not going to be realistic to where I can go, you know, see my kids play, you know, in their little league, you know, and like, that wasn't going to be the kind of reality that profession offered for me. And so that was kind of where the segue happened.
Fritz Hamburg, one of my favorites, a guy who doesn't get nearly enough credit, I think, for the job he does at St. Joe's, always in the mix in the A-10, someone who coached next to him, what would you say makes him special?
He's just a really genuinely good human being. Like, he cares. I think as an observer, sometimes you might look at him from a distance, like, oh, he's kind of a hard ass, like kind of has that look sometimes. But like when you talk to him, like, he just always is locked in, always engaged. If you've ever had bosses and stuff, sometimes you get called in the office, like, oh man, what'd I do? Like, you're always expecting the worst. And it never is, right? He's always looking first at himself, like, what did he do wrong, right? There's never any blame sent out as, you know, that's how I felt. And it was always collaborative with him as a coach with them. And he just really cares about his players. And I think, you know, I think that comes through. The guys that play for him really respect him. He puts in the work. He's always evolving. I think that you can't get caught in your ways. He's always looking for what's that next little piece that he can do. What button can he press? You know, and especially, I mean, look, today's college game is so different, you know, and the transfer portal, I don't know what the right answers are for what needs to happen in college athletics and specifically baseball. And I know coaches like Coach Hamburg are dealing with, they're really in the toughest spot because they're right in this wiggle room spot where they can play at a really high level. You know, they get really talented players, you know, at St. Joe's. The challenge becomes if you do a really good job and you develop a player, you develop the relationship in the recruiting process, you get them on campus, you see this potential. They're not a Power Four kid, which is why they end up at a mid-major. And then you help them get to that level and then they jump ship because they can go someplace better, right? And you blame them when they can go someplace better, but it's not even that. It's they don't pay $30,000 of tuition to St. Joe's while they're still on half a scholarship, right? They go get a full ride. Oh, plus maybe some NIL money. Yeah. In addition to playing in front of in these big stadiums, right? So, I mean, just financially, it's probably a smart business move for these kids to do that. It's just really hard to build a program and develop the relationships and the culture you're trying to do at that level, you know? And so I feel for guys like Fritz that are navigating that right now. And frankly, I see it with Brian O'Connor going to Mississippi State. You know, I think to leave Virginia to go to Mississippi State, it's like Virginia's got a ton of resources, but you know what they don't have? You know, Mississippi State is a baseball school. That $20 million of NIL pot that their athletic department's going to give out, a lot of it will go to baseball. If you're a Virginia, you're giving that all to football and basketball, right? You give some to baseball, some to lacrosse, some to soccer, these other national powers that they have. But the reality is that money now talks, and the student athlete piece is less of the puzzle at that level. Those kids all want to be in the big leagues, rightfully so, and they have the ability. But do they go to Virginia for the academics like they used to versus go play professional baseball in the SEC? I think that's what you're running into at the college level. And, you know, I'm sad to see my former head coach go that route, but I understand it, you know, and it's just that's where college is.
We need to take another break. The conversation with Kyle Werman will continue in just a few moments, but want to remind you again that One-on-One with Matt Leon is sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. Meet the next generation of vehicles. Check out the Honda Prologue, Accord Hybrid, or Civic Hybrid. For a limited time, you can get 0.99% APR on a 2025 Prologue, a 2.99% APR on a 2025 Accord Hybrid, or a 4.99% APR on a 2025 Civic Hybrid. Contact your local Honda dealer today. Offers applicable only to well-qualified buyers. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's return to our conversation with LaSalle College High School head baseball coach Kyle Werman.
So, as I mentioned, St. Joe's is the last stop as an assistant, and then you come to LaSalle College High School. What made that the right fit at the right time for you?
You know, I kind of, like I said, when I came to St. Joe's, I was kind of at that point like, all right, what's the pathway I want to go in my professional career as a coach? Is the college game really what I want? I wasn't ready to give it up. And the opportunity at St. Joe's was really a great opportunity for me to continue to pursue that. And had 2 great years. But in that time, I met my wife. She was working here in Philly, living in an old city. And, you know, I think the reality of that next part of my life was now there. It wasn't some hypothetical when I meet somebody. You know, she was the one, and I knew that, and I knew what kind of family life scenario I wanted. So that kind of was the impetus for me to pull the trigger on something that was I saw kind of happening at some point regardless. It wasn't like my wife dragged me out of baseball. It was something I had knew was coming. It was just the time. And so it then became like, well, what do I do now? And she's planning, I'm like, you should teach. I'm like, I'm not a teacher, you know, right? No way. Yeah. And that idea kind of settled on, I guess I could do math and science. Sure. I could figure this out. And I just started looking online, and there was a job posting for a math science teacher at LaSalle College High School. I only knew about the school because I just recruited Dominic Cucci, who is their 2-time state champion pitcher and was committed to go to St. Joe's. I'd never seen him play high school ball. Hadn't seen a high school game or even met his coach, but I picked up the phone and called Joe Parisi, who was the head coach, and kind of cold called him and said, hey, Joe, just want to introduce myself. Congrats on the state championship. They won it in 2014, the year before I got there. You know, how's the summer going? He's like, oh, it's bittersweet. I just stepped down today. That was the day I called him. I'm like, oh, wow. Okay. So at that point, I was just trying to get my foot in the door as a teacher. Figure wherever I end up landing as a teacher, I'll try to get involved in the baseball program. I had no ideas I was going to try to run a program right out of the gate. I need to find a job. And so I applied and was fortunate to get hired as a math science teacher there at LaSalle. And then the coaching job process happened in the fall, and I was fortunate to get that as well. Just talk about things kind of falling in place. That was certainly an example of it.
Big transition going from coaching college kids to high school kids. And I don't mean talent or anything. I mean just adjusting to kids that are kind of on their own to younger kids. Was that tough or was it pretty seamless?
I felt like it was pretty seamless. You know, I think I helped my brother's high school team, you know, when he was in high school. I kind of been around the game enough at different levels to understand what that was. And certainly there's a growing curve to how to structure a high school practice versus a college and the time constraints and you know, that you have. But I don't think that was – we have really mature kids at LaSalle. Like, they're really good kids, not dealing with discipline issues. They're engaged. They're excited for some new things. And I tell people all the time, like, I don't have less talented players. They're just younger players. You know, Jimmy Herron's scratching the door at the big league level, Triple A right now. He was our star player that senior year. And, you know, so you get to coach these kids that are really talented. They're just younger. You know, so that's always been fun to be able to coach them exactly how I would coach kids at the college level and just give them that information earlier.
Was the bigger transition getting used to teaching?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think the reality was, like, how you relate information as a baseball coach, I mean, it's teaching, right? It's just a different medium, right? It's how, you're still picking up on the cues of engagement, right? Are they getting the ideas? Are they applying it? So I think some of that stuff, I think, has been a natural thing in the classroom, being able to engage and get a sense, does this kid get it, all right? Oh, they don't get it. How do I give them the same information from a different direction? That's the fun challenge of teaching, whether it's in the classroom or on the field. The real challenge is, like, okay, well, how do I structure a lesson plan? What do I actually going to teach here? You know, and math's a little bit easier. I taught algebra one my first year, and then I taught physics. I was fortunate with physics. Dan Sapolo has been our longtime physics teacher at LaSalle. He's excellent. He came from working as a bigwig at PECO Electrical and segued to becoming a teacher, and he's just an elite high school physics teacher. And so I was fortunate to sit in on his second period physics one class and then teach the same class the next period. So I kind of had a template, kind of took his lessons, took notes, and then basically regurgitated it. And that was kind of how I learned how to teach physics. You know, and then you kind of make it your own over time.
So during your time so far at LaSalle College High School, four Catholic League titles and also that state title. I'm always curious, because of the intense rivalry in the Catholic League, the state title is like the top of the mountain, but like winning the Philadelphia Catholic League, does it almost hit more than the state title did?
You know, they're like two very different things. You're exactly right. I think the kids, the Catholic championship means a lot, you know, and it's funny, at LaSalle, in all of our sports, we're competitive across the board, and the Catholic League just isn't as strong in some sports than others. Certainly Philly Catholic basketball is at the top. In football, it's LaSalle and Prep, right? And then some others, right? And a lot of the other sports, in swimming, it's LaSalle. But in baseball, there's clearly depth up and down the league that it really means something to win the league. And you know, I think early in my career, I didn't really recognize that and how hard that is. And, you know, certainly the first one we won was in 2018. I had a couple guys who are still playing professional ball. Andrew Cassetti and Joe Miller were our star players. And that's, I think, for me, checking that box really made it real. And kind of, I've been all in, you know, really since that group and understanding what that means for the players and just dying to give them that experience, you know, and because it is something special. And then, look, the state tournament, you got to get the right matches, got to get lucky. It's an awesome run, you know. But at the end of the day, high school baseball is not always designed to find the best team. It's to find the hottest team who has won the one game at a time to get there. So it's very different kind of experiences. And they certainly, regardless, they're going to bond that group. Those kids that get a chance to win something together are connected forever. And I think that's what, as a coach, you want for those teams.
The Catholic League titles, do they all hit the same? Because every season's its own journey. Like, do they, I don't know that you rank them or anything like that, but does what the group had to overcome or all that, does that make them feel, do they all have their individual warm feeling?
I think every team has that, their own signature, right? And then the accomplishments within them have that same kind of feel. I think when you talk about those different groups, I immediately can think about what is unique about that group, you know? And I think what really stands out is just how you just remember what those core guys were, right? And then you can get in the weeds, all the different scenarios, all different things that happened during the year, those crazy situations that you're going to remember, those wild games. And we always talk about our guys, you know, one of the things that's challenging in high school is these kids are dealing with real pressure really for the first time. The youth travel ball environment just isn't as competitive in the same way that these kids experience in high school. So with that, though, comes like, look, our guys are going to crumble under pressure at times, right? And you get in those tough moments in the game. It's like, boy, we could lose this. That becomes those thoughts that get in your head. And I'm constantly reminding guys, like, look, do you remember the 10-0 game we had a week ago? You probably don't remember that at all. But you do remember the 2-1 win we had, right? We're building great memories right now. And I think you want it to be hard. And when you accomplish something that's hard, it's more meaningful. So don't be afraid of that, you know? And I think that's been fun to see these kids grow and experience that and build those memories.
The 2021 winning the Class 6A title, when along that run do you start to think, oh my God, we could win the state title? Like, when does it become, we're good, we won the Catholic League, to, okay, the way we're playing, how we're lining up here, I wouldn't bet against us. Like, was there a moment it crystallized for you?
I think that was a really unique group. We lost, I think, like 17-1 in three innings to Friends Central on like a Tuesday or third game. It was one of those games where we didn't have our pitching lineup, and they came out and put up like six in the first inning and just got away from you. You're like, oh my God, that was the most embarrassing loss we've ever had. We went into Easter break at that point. And we ended up not losing a game. We went 26-0 from that point on. What was unique about that group is that coming out of COVID, we had some really elite seniors in that group. We had four shortstops, and they played third, short, second, and first. So we were really talented defensively. We had good enough pitching, you know, and in fact, our ace pitcher, Ryan Marler, really didn't emerge until the playoffs. He ended up pitching, I think, three out of the four playoff games. He went complete game on Monday and then complete game on Thursday to win it. And he was an 81-mile-an-hour right-hander, just knew how to pitch. Cole Young just got called up to the big leagues for North Allegheny yesterday, and I was texting with Justin Machida, who's a left fielder who caught the pop-up to end the game. And you know, but those are the things, like with these groups, you remember those moments. Like, if we played North Allegheny 10 times, they probably beat us 7, you know? On the contrary, last year, you know, if we played Hempfield 10 times, we probably beat them 7, but they got us last year, right? And that's high school ball. But that group was really special because they were really talented seniors, really bonded, just they're all best buddies. Really smart, talented kids in the classroom, just elite human beings, right? And so it's been a lot of fun kind of looking back, and those guys still text, and you see that just finished up their college career now. It's pretty wild how fast it goes, but you know, they'll remember that experience really for the rest of their life.
Mentioned you've been at LaSalle since 2015. When do you feel like it became your program? And I don't mean your names on the door, but it became your stamp on the program. Did it take a while? Do you feel like it was relatively quickly?
No, I think it was that 2018 group. You know, I think 2015, we had a good group, lost in this PCL semifinal. That was the year I realized, okay, this is, you know, I'm like, these guys are good. We're talented. We're just going to go in, and just didn't happen. And we actually struggled the next year. You know, we had a group of seniors that didn't get a lot of playing time the year before. And we had a really talented sophomore group that then went on to win it as seniors. And so that was my first year, like, wrestling with how to manage a roster of talented young kids and returning seniors who maybe weren't quite as talented. But like, how do you manage that in the psychology of what the expectation is for a senior coming back? Am I the starter? Of course, I've done my time, right? And with that, yeah, I learned about the psychology of high school ball, that you can be really talented, but adjusting to that level. All those sophomores really struggled, even though they're really talented, but six Division I kids in that group. And we end up being like, I don't know, 11-10 on the year. Leaving the banquet, I got parents give me kind of subtle jabs like, oh, you know, you might want to figure this thing out. You might want, but yeah, I'm like, really? It's high school, dude, you know? But you realize it's more than that to these kids. And that's where it started to become a little real, you know, a decent year the next year. But that 2018 group was the first group that they were freshmen my first year, a tryout of like 62 freshmen, all inside because of the weather. I had to cut like 80 kids that year, something ridiculous. I didn't know anybody. And that group emerged as seniors and was really, really good. It was probably our most talented team all the way around offensively on the mound, and to win the Catholic League with them. It's like, okay, this is what it's about. And I think from that point on, I felt like I had a sense of how that 4-year path goes for kids at LaSalle, how that process works and what to expect. And you're always adjusting and making changes each year. But I think that's probably the point to me that kind of became my program.
Favorite part of the job?
Oh, man. I don't know if I have a good answer for that. I think selfishly, I just love teaching little details of the game. You know, I think there's different parts of a season that, you know, as a coach, from a macro level, we got to get the team right. We got to get the bunt defenses in, the first and thirds. And in that process, you don't get a chance to coach the individual because it's at the time expense of the team. There's a time window that you can get this done, you know, and I got to pick up my daughter from daycare, right? There's limitations in life that I can't stick around and be at the field for 4 hours like you might at the college level. What I really love is you get to a point where exams happen, you're done a little early, you can get to the field early, you know, and I love that one-on-one time where I see some potential in a player and I get a chance to work with them individually and help them unlock something. That I think that's the teaching piece that you get in the classroom and elsewhere that I really enjoy, and to see that aha moment click and then to watch a kid blossom. I think that's the most fun part for me.
Final question. Are there boxes still unchecked at LaSalle? You've accomplished so much already in your time. We mentioned championship stuff like that. You know, dozens of kids that have gone on to play college, talk about kids knocking on the door of the big leagues. Like, is there something that you'd really like to accomplish over the next few years that you haven't to this point?
I don't know if I think that way. I don't know if I think of like these grand goals. I mean, I think I just want to get a little better every day. I think what I love is every year is a little different. You know, every classroom is a little different. Every team is a little different. And it's a constant challenge to find what are the buttons and levers you're going to pull this year to get it all to come together, you know, and that's the challenge with our coaching staff every year we talk about, and, you know, and the faculty members, like, hey, you know, these students are a little different now post-COVID versus what they were before. Like, you know, what's our role? Hey, we got AI in the classroom. How do you teach now with these tools, you know, that now kids don't need to memorize information? And they'd be silly to, because, look, you can just look it up on your phone, right? I can go on my phone and pull out Grok and say, who's this Matt Leone guy? Tell me about his career. And I have a pretty good idea what you're about before. And, hey, what kind of questions are you going to ask me, right? These are things like there are different kinds of challenges in life. And I think that's what I look for. It's like, what's the challenge of the day? And then how do you meet that? And then the other stuff takes care of itself. You know, I hope to look back and see that there's a legacy of players that had great experience at LaSalle, were really prepared to be successful, whether it's in baseball or elsewhere. They come back decades later and they want to come back to LaSalle. They feel connected to it. That's been my experience with groups. I think I'm at the point 10 plus years where there now are starting to be those groups in my time that have come back. And I see those groups coming back, or Joe Parisi, who was here forever. And I think that's what I hope for, is that, yeah, kids want to win. It's nice to win, but I hope that they have that connection to the school and to the program, that I could be a piece of that.
Kyle Werman, thanks so much for coming in. This was great.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Matt.
And that will do it for this week's episode of One-on-One with Matt Leone, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank LaSalle College High School head baseball coach Kyle Werman for coming in studio and being our guest this week. If you like this show and you listen on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a rating and a review. It would really help us out. You can follow the show on X at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me there as well at MattLeone1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to join us again next week when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You Must Remember This is the podcast dedicated to stories from the secret and forgotten histories of 20th century Hollywood. Stories of sex, murder, institutional racism, bad men, sad women, fascist gossip columnists, and much more. Our new season is called The Old Man is Still Alive, and it's about directors like Alfred Hitchcock and John Ford, who got started in the silent era, but were still making movies in the psychedelic 60s. Follow and listen to You Must Remember This on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.